Coming up, Tampa. We've, as you probably know, completed our spring fun drive just a little over an hour ago, but there's still plenty of opportunities to pledge online at WMNF.org, and we still have some of our lovely phone answerers in the room that could take those pledges at 813-238-8001. And in fact, we do have a couple more pledges to acknowledge right now. We've got a couple of anonymous pledgers. One who wanted to say thank you for the great lineup of programming, but especially Grand National Championships. Big ups to Alistair and company, indeed. And another one saying, please credit to Joe Ellen's Art in Your Ear show. Thanks. So, indeed, if you haven't had a chance to pledge during the week or you'd like to pledge again and maybe help one of your favorite programmers who you know or heard didn't quite make their fundraising goal, you can still do that at WMNF.org. You can just designate which show, which program you would like to receive your donation. All right, so it is WMNF. It's Talking Animals time. I'm Duncan Strauss. Really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be speaking about service dogs with the woman who invented the concept of them assisting people with mobility limitations, Dr. Benita Bergen. First, though, as always, we're kicking off this show with an animal tune. This one from our beloved Ronnie Elliott, who celebrates his 65th birthday with a concert extravaganza this Friday at Skipper's Smokehouse. Here's Ronnie and some friends doing See Ya Later, Alligator, here on Talking Animals.
Well, I saw my baby walking with another man today. Yeah, I saw my baby walking with another man today. When I ask her what's the matter, this is what I heard her say. See you later, alligator, and a wild crocodile. See you later, alligator. Thought of what she told me, barely laid me loose my head. When I thought of what she told me, barely made me lose my head. The next time that I saw her, reminded her of what she said. See you later, alligator, after a while, crocodile. See you later, alligator, crocodile. Can't you see you're in my way now? Don't you know you feel my style? Sorry, pretty baby, you know my love is just for you. She said, I'm sorry, pretty baby, you know my love is just for you. Won't you say that you'll forgive me? Say your love for me is true. See you later, alligator, after a while, crocodile. I'll see you later, alligator. Your grandma style.
Thanks so very much. Thanks to WMNF and Duncan Strauss, and thanks to Talking Animals. Take care of all the animals. Give us peace on earth and end this dreadful, dreadful war.
All right, important words, maybe now more than ever. That's Ronnie Elliott, joined by some musician friends, collectively known at that day, that moment, as the Animal Geniuses, performing a rousing rendition of See You Later, Alligator at the second Talking Animals Festival last April. Ronnie's a longtime animal guy and a longtime vegetarian, 40-plus years, in fact, and he'll be joining us later in this show for a brief chat and to play a song as a prelude to the big, fabulous Ronnie Elliott 65th birthday party concert happening this Friday, April 20th, at Skipper Smokehouse. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Dr. Benita Bergen, who in 1975 invented the concept of the service dog to assist people with mobility limitations. Founding Canine Companions for Independence, after she left CCI 20 years ago, she launched what is now called Bergen University of Canine Studies. We'll discuss all this and more when we speak with Dr. Bergen in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner, which involves, of course, animal comedy. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive an exclusive Ronnie Elliott birthday T-shirt. It's got to be picked up at Friday's concert at Skipper's, but otherwise cool and fabulous. And if you get there early, you'll have your choice of size and style. And again, later we'll chat briefly with Ronnie himself. Hear an animal song from him. Again, it's something of a sneak preview to the big birthday bash this Friday at Skipper's Smokehouse. So right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcement segment. Look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon. Produced by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, our first item actually is late-breaking news. Wow. Okay, so another pledge coming in from at WMNF.org, where you could do the very same thing if you didn't have a chance during the week, or even if you did. Anyways, a nice $80 pledge from Cynthia Schellebarger, and she's taking the Women's Radioactive T-shirt, and this is in support of Talking Animals, fittingly enough. So thank you very, very much, Cynthia. And really, on a very related note, the Spring Fund Drive, as I mentioned, ended just a little over an hour ago. So big, big thank you to all who supported Talking Animals and all the other shows on WMNF. And again, we fell a bit short of our hoped-for goal, maybe more than a bit short. So it's not too late to add your support. Again, if you were busy, if you were away, didn't have a chance to pledge to your favorite show or shows, or even if you did and you feel like, hey, you know what? I'm so filled with good spirit and generosity, I'm going to do it again. Go to WMNF.org. And again, you can earmark your donation if there's a specific show or host that you know didn't quite make their goal and you'd like to help him or her in particular. You can indicate that on the pledge form. And again, I think for another few minutes at least, we're probably still set up to take those pledges over the phone at 813-238-8001. So again, thanks for all your help and support. And still an opportunity to do a bit more if you have an opportunity. On to the animal news. So some of the biggest news in the animal world happened right here in Tampa in the last few days. Hillsborough County Board of County Commission Chairman Ken Hagen announced Saturday at the Save 90 conference held at Hillsborough Community College that Hillsborough County will become a no-kill county. Over 250 people were in attendance to learn how other communities have accomplished this goal of saving animals' lives. The Alliance to Save 90 organized the conference held Saturday in Tampa. And Commissioner Hagen stated to Linda Hamilton and Frank Hamilton, the founders of the Alliance to Save 90, quote, "I am inspired by your great work." Hagen explained that Hillsborough County is in the process of hiring a new animal services director, and that, quote, "our new director simply must have and believe in a no-kill philosophy." Further stated that he is 100% supportive of Hillsborough County becoming a no-kill county, and that, quote, "the killing must stop." So, great work on the part of the Save 90 folks, and great news and decision by Ken Hagen. And on a somewhat related note, the pet food company co-owned by Ellen DeGeneres will be dropping off a donation of 36,000 pounds of free pet food at the animal-based charity's thrift store on Manhattan Avenue. Actually, they did that yesterday, I should say. I'm sorry. Up to 40 local animal rescue groups will be in the parking lot to receive the food. Animal rescue groups foster abandoned pets, giving them a temporary home until they can be adopted. Their goal is to keep pets from being sent to shelters where the pets will be euthanized if no one wants them. Halo Pet Food is making the donation in support of animal-based charities, which was created to reduce the number of euthanized pets by raising money to supply food and other necessities to the rescue groups. Charity's thrift shop, which is run by volunteers as part of that mission. And broadening out nationally, this has already been covered on a few things today, Amy's show and the news headlines from NPR, but this has sort of a, at least roundabout animal connection. The rock star Ted Nugent became the latest and perhaps least likely proxy in the battle between the Obama and Romney camps as Democrats seized on the vaguely threatening remarks that Mr. Nugent made over the weekend. At a National Rifle Association conference, and representatives of President Obama and Mitt Romney did their best to distance themselves from the comments. Mr. Nugent, the self-described Motor City madman and a longtime NRA board member who has endorsed Mr. Romney, appeared Saturday at the group's annual convention in St. Louis. In a raucous speech, Mr. Nugent told audience members that, quote, if Barack Obama becomes the president in November again, I will either be dead or in jail by this time next year. He added that they could not, quote, clean house in this vile, evil, America-hating administration. I don't even know what you're made out of. So, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Democratic National Chairwoman, called on Mr. Romney to condemn Nugent's violent and hateful rhetoric immediately, and it has no place in our political discourse or this campaign. I think I saw earlier this morning that, despite that, or with that in mind, in fact, Mr. Nugent doubled down on his comments and threw in an attack or two on Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So, the Nuge. Now, you might have heard this, about this story, or seen a picture, or even video. It's been sort of got me, and I think got other people. So this just comes from California, Baldwin Park in particular. And the apparent owner of a Labrador Retriever that made headlines after refusing to abandon her companion, a dog who had been struck and killed by a car, has come forward to claim the pet. But officials said Monday that the animal will not be released until a home inspection is done. The dog, known to animal control officials as Grace and to her family as Maggie, was found Wednesday standing in the middle of Hacienda Boulevard in La Puente beside the body of her canine companion. A Good Samaritan placed traffic cones around the animals to keep Maggie from vehicles which she while she stood watch and traffic passed nearby. Animal control officers later took her to the Baldwin Park Animal Care Center. Dozens of people called or visited the animal shelter offering to adopt the sweet-natured dog. Officials were accepting adoption applications, the first filled out by the Good Samaritan, until someone claiming to be the owner showed up. So the story goes on from there, but it's an incredible picture and, like I say, video footage of Maggie standing by her her fallen friend. And since we've mentioned Rick Scott a few times during our fund drive, since he vetoed all funding, Florida funding for public broadcasting in the TV radio realm, I thought I would get to this story, which came up while we were gone a little bit. But so he just recently approved an agricultural bill which permits animals to be dyed neon green and day glow pink. This kind of broke during the Easter weekend. So, anyways, the bill legalizing such technicolor pets doesn't go into effect until July 1st. Florida Senator Ellen Bogdanoff from Fort Lauderdale snuck Amendment 303390, repealing a 45-year-old ban on artificially dyeing or coloring certain animals or fowl, onto HB 1197. Which revises certain agricultural codes in the state. Her amendment also permits chicks to be sold before they are 4 weeks. Florida State Democratic Minority Leader Nan Rich, who tried to block the amendment, said the original ban was to ensure that, quote, we don't have a lot of adorable ducks, rabbits, and chickens that are given away at Easter time and look so cute, and then 2 or 3 months later, nobody wants them. Bogdanoff maintained that she was just looking out for the rights of dog groomers who should be able to compete in shows and parades. Needless to say, animal rights group petitioned Scott to veto the bill, so we'll keep tracking that. And we have more news, but we'll see if we can get to that later. If not, I think we got hit the key points there. So it's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. It's always a treat to add a new bit to our collection, especially one as strong and funny as I think at least this one is that we're premiering here today. So from his new comedy special, this is Jim Gaffigan with part of a piece called Whales on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I've been trying to swim a lot, you know. You always hear swimming's the best exercise, but have you seen how fat whales are? Whales, they're like swimming all the time. It's not working, whales. Not working. Whales always kind of sound depressed, don't they? Rejected by eHarmony. My Facebook friends forgot my birthday. Why am I so bad at hide and seek? Fish always find me. Wouldn't it be great if we found out whales were in complete denial about how huge they are? It's mostly water weight. A lot of water weight. Once after a show, someone came up to me and they're like, you know, whales aren't fat, they have a layer of blubber. I thought calling myself Big Bone was a cop out. Blubber? That's like the opposite of muscle. It goes like muscular, tone, flabby, and then like a mile away is blubber. Fat made a noise would be blubber. Damn you, Plankton, you don't even taste good. Plankton, that can't be that high in calories. That's gotta be frustrating for some whales. All they eat is plankton. I only eat plankton. You know, the fish are like, and cupcakes. Just plankton sprinkled on pizza. It's mostly water weight. I do love whales. I don't want you to get the wrong idea. But it's not like there are people that are anti-whale anyway.
That was Jim Gaffigan with a portion of a piece called Whales, taken from his brand new comedy special, Mr. Universe, which, following the lead of Louis C.K. and Aziz Ansari, is available only on his website, jimgaffigan.com. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Dr. Bonita Bergen. As I mentioned earlier, Dr. Bergen, more than 35 years ago, invented the concept of the service dog to assist people with mobility limitations. About the same time, founded Canine Companions for Independence. After she left Canine Companions some 20 years ago, she launched what is now called Bergen University of Canine Studies, where folks can pursue all sorts of degrees, including a master's in canine studies. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Dr. Bonita Bergen to Talking Animals. Good morning, Dr. Bergen.
Good morning.
Thanks so much.
May I call you Duncan?
I'm sorry?
May I call you Duncan?
Yes, may I call you Dr. Bergen?
Call me Bonnie.
I'm just kidding. Okay, thank you very much, Bonnie. So there's so much ground I'm hoping to cover with you, but in some ways that probably really can't be done effectively without addressing sort of that momentous moment, occasion when you came up with the idea for these sorts of service dogs. I mean, I'm sure you've recounted this a thousand times, but I'm really interested in exploring the inspiration for a big idea or a pioneering development such as yours. So may I ask you to hit 1,001 times of sort of recounting how you sort of came up with the idea of employing dogs in this manner?
Absolutely. In fact, it led me to our offering the master's degree here at the university in dog studies, because I was in a master's program. I was sitting there. I was listening to people talk about what they would do with people with disabilities and how they would help them. And I kept going back in my mind to the time that I was teaching in Turkey or traveling through Kathmandu, India, Pakistan, and I just kept seeing all these people with disabilities getting out and about. Now, not nicely. I mean, they were crawling or they were being helped by donkeys and burros, but they were out and about. And so I just sat there listening to the ideas of stainless steel on the walls of institutions being a better way to manage situations for people with disabilities and nutritious meals, which did make sense. But I just kept going back to why aren't they out of the institutions? Why aren't they doing things for themselves? What can we do to change that? And all of a sudden, I just went, dogs. Dogs could do it. Dogs could help them. And I knew nothing. So let's not assume that I had any knowledge. I didn't. It was just an idea. I went around asking people to help, went to guide dogs saying, this is an idea. Everyone told me it couldn't be done, it shouldn't be done, it wouldn't work, it was a bad idea. And stupidly, and sometimes I think being stupid is, you know, maybe naive is a better word, might not be a bad thing, because I did kept trying, and I found someone who herself, by the name of Carrie Knaus, was severely disabled in a power wheelchair, who when her head fell forward, she couldn't even lift it. She didn't have enough muscle in her neck to lift her head back up on her shoulders. Someone had to actually put it back up there, and she could lift very little weight in either hand. But she wanted to try, and she was a dynamo. And between the two of us and a dog by the name of Abdul, almost every single thing that service dogs are doing today, opening doors, pulling open doors, pulling open refrigerator doors, getting in, getting food out of the refrigerator to bring to someone with a disability, turning lights on and off, picking up dropped items, all came from what she told me she needed, the kind of help she needed.
Well, okay, so let's just back up a little bit if we could, Bonnie, because, you know, you clearly on the one hand had this kind of gigantic epiphany when you were teaching internationally, and yet you said you didn't know anything. But let me ask you this. I mean, when the light bulb went off, you said dogs to yourself. So what sort of work or at least history had you had with dogs, either growing up or otherwise, where that was the thing that popped into your head, seeing the burrows and animals used in other ways in those other countries?
And I think that's a good question. I'm not sure I can answer it. I don't think I can segue from one to the other. I had pet dogs. My husband and I, when we got married, had a pet dog. They went with us everywhere. I mean, you know, we were one of those pet owners that dog was just a family member. As far as any formal dog training or any formal knowledge, I didn't have any. Mm-hmm. All I can tell you is I saw the donkeys and burros helping.
Yeah.
And I just somehow or another pictured dogs being able to help. And I didn't even know what help was needed.
Sure.
I didn't know enough about people with disabilities to even know what help was needed. And Carrie and I worked through all of that. The only way the dogs got trained at initial stages was because I was a teacher. And as a teacher, I used teaching methods, which means low or no aversive methods involved in actually getting the dog to do all these behaviors. I remember when I was 12 and I lived in Willits, California, which is a little podunk city, town, 3,500 people. My mother would drive us down to a little bit larger town to train our house dog, and we used treats. And so I did have that background of using treats to train,
mm-hmm.
And that obviously was what carried over into the working with Carrie and getting the dog, Abdul, to do all of these things. And Abdul, by the way, deserves tremendous credit, and he has not been honored for his being the very, very first dog, and I think he should be, as should Carrie, because the two of them did just remarkable things in terms of moving the concept forward. Had they failed, had I failed, I don't know what would have happened.
Sure. Well, Dr. Bergen, I mean, Bonnie, sorry, I'm still getting used to calling you Bonnie. Just when people have doctor, I say doctor. But anyway, you're obviously very generous with the credit to both Abdul and Carrie, but I'd be curious to know when you had just kind of connected those dots and you make it sound like it was nothing more than just sort of, hey, we had dogs, and I saw this happen in these other countries. But what was the initial reaction when you started mentioning this idea to friends and colleagues? What were people initially supportive? Were they initially looking at you like you had kind of lost your marbles? I mean,
yeah, definitely, like I lost my marbles.
Yeah.
Keeler, I think, was the big name in dog training at that time, and Barbara Woodhouse, and there was just a lot of very firm physical methods used to train dogs. And so everyone that I took the idea to is, including guide dogs, I might add, so everyone I took the idea to is imagining someone who can't move or can't move very much of their body, unable to apply those methods. And they were absolutely right. But what they didn't know and what I learned subsequently is the dog has an amazing mind, an amazing willingness to be involved and help someone. And, of course, the selection of the dog had to be very carefully done in order to choose a dog that was low aroused and willing, biddable, wanting to help, having all of those traits. Again, I knew nothing about this at the beginning, but someone had given my husband and I a golden retriever. My husband had accidentally let the golden retriever breed to a lab, a neighbor lab, and we had a litter of puppies, and that's where Abdul came from. So he was a golden lab cross. Had I been I actually tried every breed in the book after that. I did Belgian Taverns, I did Dobermans, I did Clumber Spaniels, I did, you know, Border Collies. I mean, just about every breed.
Yeah.
Nothing worked as well as the golden retriever in the lab. And that, again, by chance, happened to be the very first one I tried. And therefore probably was very much a part of that initial success.
Yeah. So some of this really was, serendipitous. I mean, to hear you recount it, although, you know, it seems like your role and your idea probably played a little larger size aspect to this than you might be acknowledging. But that is interesting that Abdul happened to be that particular kind of dog, which you later over, you know, many years, I think, have established that's the kind of dog for the job.
And where that has led today is offering a master's. And what I tell my master's students is you're in this program to change the world. And the only way you're going to do it is if you come up with an idea that you are passionate about, because so many master's students who go to universities just drop out. You know, they get through the coursework and they don't do their final thesis or culminating project. The thing that I did was I was passionate. I knew it was the right thing to do. And so all of those naysayers just, you know, rolled off my back, and I just kept looking for a way to do it. And I think that's what changes the world, is this belief, you know, right or wrong, naive or not, you know, are such a powerful belief that something is the way to go. And so, again, we try to promote that here at the University of Canine Studies, because I know now that that works.
Yeah, but that's so interesting, because, again, you sort of, I think, again, with undue modesty, kind of, you know, made this sound like you just sort of stumbled into this and you didn't really, you know, have any kind of background. And yet it sounds like almost immediately you were sort of filled with the kind of passion to then really pursue this sort of vision that you allegedly stumbled into.
Right. And honestly, God, I was an educator, so I both had a bachelor's and a teaching credential, and I was in a master's program, so I wasn't exactly, uneducated, to put it simply.
Sure.
But I don't know where it came from.
Yeah.
Really and truly, it just hit.
Right.
It just hit, and it hit in such a powerful way that there was no alternative but to do it.
Right. Well, that's the thing. That's, if you talk to enough people over the years that you know, create cool things, or artists, or just innovate things, or pioneer different programs, I mean, that's often the story. It's like, I'm not sure where it came from, but again, you know, they're like yourself, you know, they listen to it. When that kind of idea, you know, taps them on the shoulder, they turn around and listen. So let me let folks know, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Dr. Bonita Bergen, who, in the 70s pioneered the concept of the service dog to assist people with mobility limitations. She's now president of Bergen University of Canine Studies. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask Dr. Bergen a question, offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So let's at least briefly spend a little more time on kind of that initial period and then get us up to the present. So how direct was, when that light bulb moment happened, how direct was the path of sort of returning from your travels and then not only saying, hey, Abdul, I've got an idea for you, and I guess, you know, saying the same thing to your friend Carrie as well, but then launching Canine Companions for Independence, which it sounded like they were very, you know, sort of close together.
Right. Once Abdul was trained, and people that you know, people in the disabled community saw the dog working for Carrie, then I was getting a lot of people coming in and saying, will you train one for me? Will you train one for me? And I began to do that. And I do want to add that we do have an associate degree that is exactly aimed at teaching people how to start their own program or to go to work for a program. And one of the parts of the curriculum is I tell them everything I did wrong, because I made mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake, but obviously enough successes that there was enough motivation to keep moving forward. And I developed Canine Companions, which is a quote-unquote production methodology for placing dogs with people with disabilities. And then I segued over to actually becoming, I had to decide, did I want to stay in production and have all these people ask me how to do it and have to tell them no, because obviously I knew that you had to create this huge curriculum if you were going to try to teach people how to do it. And at the same time, I was so torn, because by that time I was getting so many applications. I mean, it was a 5 to 10 year waiting list. I couldn't meet the applications. So it was like, which one is my baby, Canine Companions or the service dog? And I opted for the service dog and moved into education and taught people how to do it. And now there's like programs all around the world, and most of them run by our graduates, and all across the United States. And again, most of them run by our graduates. And the concept has far outgrown guide dogs. I mean, the number of service dogs out there far exceeds guide dogs that are out there. And it's not ending, especially after the war. You know, a lot of the veterans are coming back in need of physical or emotional support.
And sure.
It's wonderful that it works. It's sad that we don't have other ways of resolving multiple sclerosis or other disabilities. And I think that will happen. But the dog is such an amazing animal. I mean, if I've learned anything in this 37 years, I have learned that the dog has a mind, a really strong, positive, cognitive mind that has a number sense and knows time and can identify amounts and has expectations that they're surprised when those expectations aren't met. And in fact, we're moving into something I think really is I mean, we've been teaching dogs to read, and I actually published a book on that. I think the next book that I'll be publishing is what we're finding about the moral sense of a dog and the stages that a dog goes through, very much like a child. So, you know, at the beginning, it's, you know, I want to do it for me. It's all about my ego. And then, you know, the only reason they don't do it is because they fear punishment. And then they move into the next stage, which is, you give me something and I'll do it. And that's where you see mothers saying, okay, I'll give you a popsicle if you, you know, go grocery shopping with me and don't create a fuss.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move into the third stage, which is the dog really wants to do it to please. And out of love and caring, which of course is an important stage for a service dog. And then they move into the fourth stage, which is even more interesting, because it becomes, this is the law. I'm supposed to do it this way and only this way. And that's usually, in terms of children, that's usually when they're entering college age, is between in that fourth stage, sometimes the fifth stage. And the fifth stage is, you know what, I'll do the right thing for the situation, whether the law says to do it or not. And that's when you see these dogs making choices to really help someone, even though someone else is saying don't do it. In fact, we just had a dog placed with a 14-year-old kid who is a severe quadriplegic and can only drive his power wheelchair with his chin. So as you can imagine, he has very little, well, he has no movement of
sure.
his body.
Yeah.
And the dog goes to school with the kid. Well, the dog started barking one day in the middle of the class, and everyone's like, okay, well, I guess the dog has to toilet. Them, you know, why else is he barking? And they went to take the dog out, and she wouldn't go. She stayed with him. And then they went, what's going on here? And they looked at him, and he had gone into a diabetic coma.
Mm.
Now, this dog was not trained as a diabetic alert dog.
Yeah.
So she made the decision that people needed to know about this. I mean, where's this coming from? Unless you, mean, you're forced to credit the dog with more cognition and more awareness. And certainly having moved into a stage five, which is, you know, I'm going to bark even though I know I'm not supposed to bark in this classroom because that's what's necessary to get people's attention.
Yeah, that's I'm barking
it's
for the
awesome.
For the greater good in a sense there.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
And Bonnie, I mean with this this next book sounds fascinating. And I'm just curious just because I did a little news, you know, in the animal news thing at the first part of the show, I did an item about you might have heard or read about this dog. This was in Southern California, Baldwin Park, where this lab, and I guess it was a friend, a fellow lab or some other kind of dog, unfortunately got hit by a car and was killed. And this lab, like, stood vigil right next. There's pictures and YouTube video and stuff of this black lab, like, basically protecting or standing by her friend. And to me, this almost seems like right what you're saying about, like, you know, because there's cars whizzing by, I'm sure there's people honking, people saying get out of the road, whatever. Finally, some good Samaritan came and put traffic cones around both dogs. But I mean, that just seems almost right what you're saying about the moral sense that this black lab had.
Exactly, and the idea that some people and some trainers are still using aversive methods to train. Instead of using positive methods to bring, just like we do with kids, the more positive we are and the more we reinforce behaviors and the more we motivate, the further those kids go in terms of life. And these kids that don't get that, they don't get the opportunity. And the same is true of dogs.
Yeah.
Dogs that don't get it don't get the opportunity to expand their abilities to participate in society.
And so, Dr. Brigg, I mean, it really seems like over the years, you know, you've obviously developed different ideas about what the dogs are capable of and sort of these stages that they themselves go through as they, you know, evolve and become maybe more sophisticated. What all those years, I imagine this may have changed a little bit, maybe a lot. What are the most important traits or characteristics of a service dog? I mean, obviously, I assume calm demeanor and some of those things, but there must be other things that are very specific to the dogs that are charged with those kinds of tasks.
Yeah, and you're right. I've learned over the years because, as I said, I've made mistakes and mistakes and mistakes. And one mistake is I hired people. I didn't think I knew what I was doing, and I hired people to come in that were, you know, really hotshot trainers, and I was so relieved because I just was feeling like I was not doing it as well as it needed to be done. And then they started training the dogs using aversive methods, which was, again, popular at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that got the dogs, the people who were disabled who got the dogs, started returning them. Because, again, the dog being taught aversive methods and then being placed with someone who couldn't use aversive methods meant that the dog's whole context got shifted and the dog started to say, well, I can do this then and I can do that. And they didn't have to make a choice because they were never given an opportunity to learn to make a choice at stage three. They were still being treated at stage one and stage two, so they hadn't popped into a stage three. So, yeah, I mean, all kinds of things shifted for me, learning that they can read, learning that they can, you know, they have a more conscious awareness than I would have ever anticipated them having. And going from using, initially no aversion, then aversion, and then breaking out and dropping aversion, selecting the dogs that are low aroused. But one interesting characteristic is very little initiative. Because if they had very much initiative, they would be deciding where they should go and what they should do.
Yeah.
And they needed to follow. They needed to be very biddable and trainable and follow. No prey drive. Of course, you can't get rid of prey drive. That's a dog. But,
yeah.
You know, minimizing prey drive. Looking for a dog that is neotenized, which means that they're still more childlike.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're going to get a German Shepherd that is very adult-like and very definitive about what he should do and what he shouldn't do in terms of his own mental development.
Mm-hmm.
But golden retrievers, especially the ones that we breed, are very childlike.
Sure.
So they turn to the person with a disability and say, Mommy, Daddy, what do you want me to do?
Uh-huh.
You know, and I try to get my students to remember that stage they were in when they wanted to go in and do the dishes with Mom.
Hmm.
You know, later on, of course, they get to a stage where they don't anymore.
Sure, sure.
So we breed for that very childlike
interesting.
Behavior. And, of course, then we have to work really hard at no medical problems and, you know, the genetics that are as much longevity as we can get and just on and on and on in all of
sure.
those areas.
But it's really interesting, too, that those of us who aren't, you know, particular fans, to say the least, of that kind of aversive training, it's interesting that in your world, that it's not only just, you know, obviously kind of rough on the dogs and whatever, but that it really stunts their growth or their potential development.
Yeah, well said. Thank you. I'm going to use those words of yours in my next class.
All right.
But you're absolutely right.
All right. Well, we're just in our final moments. We're speaking with Dr. Benita Bergen, pioneer in the field of service dogs. In the 70s, she founded Canine Companions for Independence and is now president of Bergen University of Canine Studies. We're just in our last couple minutes, but if you want to quickly join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org, we'll do that. And hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Bergen?
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Shannon. I'm calling from Tampa.
Hi, Shannon.
Hi, I'm just wondering, this is my passion also to train service dogs. It's something I've just come to in the last couple of years. I'm in my 40s, and I'm trying to figure out how to get involved in it, and I don't think I'm able to go to school in California, but I'm just wondering if she had any suggestions on how to get started on that.
All right, Dr. Bergen?
Yeah, Shannon, hi.
Hi.
So probably the best thing to do if you can't actually take a full-fledged education would be to try to get hired as an apprentice by mm-hmm. one of the programs so that they will, and you need to understand that their, you know, their pay would be less, but they
right.
would start training you and putting you through the process of becoming a full-fledged trainer. And it's a really gratifying career path. So I would highly recommend that you try to do it.
They seem to be inundated with applications in these programs. There are a lot of people applying for them.
Yeah, so are you saying, Shannon, that it's hard to kind of get your foot in the door then? Is that?
It's very hard. From everything I've heard from people, there are people from all over the country swamping all of the organizations with opportunities to learn how to do this.
Well, one of the things that I can promise you is one of the more successful methods is persistence. So you go back, you call, and you go back. It's just like getting any job, you know. The better you present yourself and the more you show you have a passion for it and the more you're willing to hear them say, no, I don't have anything at this time, and then go back again and, you know, not let yourself be discouraged, but mm-hmm. just continue to push on that door in a very polite and very appropriate way. It's hard, and I know this for a fact because I had someone just keep sending me her resume and sending me, and we don't hire. We very seldom hire here. And I finally said, okay, I'll meet with you. You know, I mean, and then I met with her, and she sold herself very well, and ultimately we hired her. So it's one of those things that if you allow yourself to be put off by them saying no, you won't go anywhere. But if you
right.
just are willing to say, okay, it's going to take me 20 times before somebody's going to open the door, so I'm going to take every no that I hear as one step closer to hearing the yes. And then
right.
that'll keep you a little bit more motivated, and it will happen.
Okay, Shannon, thanks so much for your call. Sounds like Dr. Bergen suggesting you need the tenacity of a dog with a bone, basically, to advance here. So, Dr. Bergen, we are sort of just in our last moment here, maybe a little bit over, but so enjoying the conversation. I'm sure our listeners have too. Let me just ask, just as maybe a final question, what would you say at this point in 2012, is the most misunderstood aspect of service dogs? I mean, what would you like folks to understand better about service dogs that a lot of us that just aren't steeped in that world like you are just aren't aware of?
You know, I'm going to, do you mind if I segue off and say what I think is the most misunderstood thing about dogs?
Sure.
I think that they need, we start training dogs at 4 weeks of age. That early, early embedded information. We only train them for 5 to 10 minutes a day. We're not overdoing it, but we are putting information into their brain that will be there for the rest of their lives. And we're teaching them the series of commands and appropriate behaviors. And I think that the whole world has to start realizing that early puppy education is as important as early childhood education. And it's time that the world starts to recognize that.
Well, boy, well said, and that's probably the perfect point at which to leave this conversation. So, again, we've been speaking with Dr. Benita Bergen. It's Bergen University of Canine Studies. The website is Bergen, BERGINU.EDU. Again, Dr. Bergen, thanks so much for making the time to join us on Talk Animals and for all your great work over many, many years' time.
My pleasure. It was nice to have a chance to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, an exclusive Ronnie Elliott birthday T-shirt that must be picked up at Ronnie's birthday concert at Skipper's this Friday. So the first person who calls 813-239-9663 correctly identifies this animal tune. In a moment, we'll have a quick chat with Ronnie and hear an animal song from him. Right now, though, it's Name That Animal Tune from Talking Animals.
The Indians send signals from the rocks above the pass. The cowboys take position in the bushes and the grass. The squaw is with the corporal, she is tied against a tree. She doesn't mind the language, it's the beating she don't need. She lets loose all the horses when the corporal is asleep. And he wakes to find the fire's dead and arrows in his axe. And Davy Crockett rides around and says it's cool for cats, it's cool for cats.
Ooh,
the Sweeney's doing 90 cause they've got nowhere to go.
All right. We'll take any callers or guessers on that off the air, but we got to get to the matter at hand on a Ronnie Elliott-related note. We have in the studio with us Ronnie Elliott, who, again, this Friday, this coming Friday, April 20th, is having his 65th birthday party at Skipper's Smokehouse, and so we wanted to get people primed for that and always have a nice opportunity to chat with Ronnie. Hi, Ronnie, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Good, thanks for joining us in studio, no less.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, you've been staying much time here, you're going to be getting your mail here, I think.
So
tell us a little bit about the concert, and then we'll hear a song, hopefully.
A lot of dancing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Go-go boots and the whole cages.
Yeah. I hope. But for some reason, I'm in the mood, for everybody to be dancing.
Awesome.
So,
and with that lineup, I think there'll be inspiration
be
for all kinds of dancing.
It's Sandy Atkinson.
Right.
And then Ramsey Midwood. And actually, Ramsey will be backed up by the Nationals or some part of the Nationals.
So the Nationals are, of course, going to be on stage with you that night.
Yeah.
And who, just so everybody can tell their players with or without a program, what constitutes the Nationals 2012 edition?
Well, it doesn't change all that much. Every now and then, somebody goes in or out. People are usually back, but it's Natty Moss Bond, Steve Connolly, Walt Buckland, Harry Hayward, Pamela Epps, and Spencer Hinkle.
Cool. Yeah. So they'll be backing you, and then sounds like also backing Ramsey.
Yeah, Midwood. Some portion of them will be backing Ramsey.
Cool.
Too.
And I imagine there'll be a little cross-pollinating of bands and playing with each other.
I hope it's not that well organized. That's why we need a lot of dancing.
A lot of drinking, a lot of dancing. That's right. Excellent. All right. Yeah. So, this sounds great, and people can go to WMNF.org and get their tickets there or the usual WMNF outlets or call right here at good old WMNF and speak to Miss Julie. 813-238-8001. And, it sounds like it's going to be a huge blast. I don't know if we'll be playing an animal tune there that night or not, but, we're sort of one note here in the Talking Animals world. So
thank
perhaps
goodness.
We can, perhaps we can ask you to favor us with an animal tune right now.
Yeah, actually, this is a kiddie song that I didn't learn it as a kiddie. I learned it from Ramsey Midwood. So it's a
reliable source.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Cool. It's Ronnie Elliott.
Down home, way down on the farm. Down home,
way down on the farm. Down home, we had an old shack way down on the farm. The bats fly out, they fly right back down home on the farm. Oh, down home, I had an old car way down on the farm. It eats up the gas, but it don't get far way down on the farm. You know, down home, we had an old horse way down on the farm. Feeding him hay is a total loss way down on the farm. Down home, we had an old mule way down on the farm. He may look dumb, but he ain't no fool way down on the farm. I said down home, we had an old bull way down on the farm. He eats and eats, and he never gets full way down on the farm. Down home, had an old ox way down on the farm. When he gets hungry, he actually talks way down on the farm. Ah, down home, had an old goat way down on the farm. All the tin cans go down his throat way down on the farm. Down home, had an old pig way down on the farm. His tail is little, but his belly's big way down on the farm. Oh, down home, we had an old hen way down on the farm. She lays an egg every now and then down home on the farm. Down home, we had an old hound way down on the farm. He weighs 450 pounds down home on the farm. Hey, down home, we had an old cat way down on the farm. He plays with the mouse, but he's scared of the rat way down on the farm. Oh, down home, down home, way down on the farm. Down home, way down, way down on the farm.
Yay! That's Ronnie Elliott, who again will be celebrating his 65th birthday in grand style this Friday, April 20th at Skipper's Smokehouse with the Nationals, Ramsey Midwood, and Sandy Atkinson. And we're going to chat for another minute or so, hopefully, Ronnie. But let me thank a few more people who are still pledging. We've ended our spring fund drive about 10 o'clock or so, but folks are still kind enough to either be calling in their pledges at 813-238-8001 or doing it online at WMNF.org. So including Stan Jankowicz with a $100 pledge to the Public Affairs Block, loves radioactivity and all news shows programming. Thanks to everyone for supporting the unions. Also likes music, Bob Dylan, B.B. King. And so thank you. He's getting another men's shirt. And a pledge to support Talking Animals from Dan Morelli. And he's taking the men's radioactive T-shirt. So thanks to both of you and any others who will be still pledging. There's still time to help us make up our little, fell a little bit short of our goal here by the end of the fund drive today. So any further help would be great, and you can earmark it for any of your favorite programmers who you know may have fallen a little short of their individual goals. So Ronnie, so let's talk about, I think we talked about this once before, but there's, let's talk about the dog or other animals, but I think there's one dog in particular that lives at your house, right?
Oh, yeah, Jamaica, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a bad girl.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I wonder what she would think of some of the things that Dr. Bergen was saying.
Well, she wouldn't take kindly to it. She would not be much of a service dog, I'll tell you.
You get me something.
Yeah,
right?
She has ambition. Yeah, I'd be more of a good service dog.
Yeah, well, we were talking off air. I mean, I think I'd like to come back as a Dr. Bergen service dog based on some of the things she was saying there.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Anyway, so that's cool, and you've been an animal guy for
forever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Years and years and years, and again, I just think We also touched on this, I think, once before, but you became a vegetarian like many, many moons ago.
Yeah, I was 17 or 18 years old, so it's been a very long time.
Wow, okay, wow. Well, because rumor has it you're turning 65 very soon, so yeah, I can't do the math there, but I know that's a good number.
It's a long
years.
Time, I can
yeah,
tell that.
No, that's great, and again, I think... you know, when you're on tour as a musician and stuff, at some point that must have been, you know, a little tricky maneuvering in and out of certain cities. Like, hey, you know.
Yeah, when I was a kid, it was a lot of grilled cheese sandwiches and. Yeah,
sure,
yeah.
Things to keep you on track. Yeah. That's great. cool. Well, again, Ronnie will be at Skipper's this Friday, and tickets are available through WMF.org, the usual outlets. And, of course, you can call here and speak to Miss Julie, and she'll fix you up with tickets, 813-238-8001. It's going to be a huge blast. Lots of dancing.
A lot of dancing.
As Ronnie promises, and a lot of great bands and folks, and I'm sure a lot of guest appearances and kooky improvised things. And it's just going to be fun, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be great.
Yeah,
so
have a good time.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to that. And, Ronnie, thanks for coming in. And
thank you. And Duncan, I know you don't like to hear any of this, but, you know, we have a radio station of heroes. Thank God we have this. And Duncan is a hero in this group of heroes. He speaks for the animals because they can't do it, and we love you for it. Thanks.
Wow, well, that's very nice. And, you know, to me, there's all kinds of heroes on both sides of the studio today, if you ask me. So, Ronnie, so thanks again. Those are really kind words, and we'll see you Friday night at the Skipper's birthday bash.
Thanks very much.
All right, so we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNet Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, April 25th, when our guest will be Dean Steffen, who for more than two decades has been a noted writer of all kinds of animation. So when there's talking animals on TV or the big screen, Dean has often put the words in their mouths. So it should be kind of a fun and different show, one I've wanted to do for a long, long time. So I hope you'll join us then. I hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as podcasts and archives. So we'll catch you next time. Thanks for supporting WMNF. NPR News is coming up next. And then Scott Elliott will be back with his fabulous show, the also edition of It's the Music. It's NPR News. It's WMNF Tampa. Thanks again for all the support.
News poll reveals that if the presidential election